18. Nikolai. The dinner was long but merry, and Nikolai's chef outdid himself by serving at least 7 different foods in jelly. Makai and her retainers left when the dancing began, and once the treaty was signed. Whether she would keep to the agreement they'd made was in Tamar's, Ares, and Mayu's hands now. "You're welcome to stay," Nikolai said as the queen's horses and carriage were brought around to take them out to the airfield. "I've performed as much as I'm able this night," Makai replied. "I even managed to hold down that hideous meal. Now I need to see just how much damage my sister has done." Before Makai climbed into her carriage, she gestured to Nikolai, clearly wishing to speak away from her ministers. "Something happened in Amrat Zhen. Some kind of blight. There were similar incidents near Bezhu and Par.
They call it Kiliklava, the vampire. The same thing has happened in Ravka."
"I know. But I have to wonder if those occurrences were simply cover for the deployment of some new Ravkan weapon."
"This isn't a weapon," said Nikolai. "Not one any of us know how to wield. The blight has struck in the Wandering Isle, Fjerda, and Novia Zem."
She paused, taking that in. "The shadows, the dead soil that follows in the wake of this blight, all of it is reminiscent of the Fold."
"It is."
"There is talk of the return of the Darkling, the Starless One."
"I've heard the same talk."
"And what will you do if he has found a way to return?"
If only Nikolai knew. But he doubted strap him to a big thorn bush and try to send him to hell once and for all would incite much confidence.
"First, I need to best the wolf at my door. Then we'll see what nightmares lurk in the dark."
"You will share any intelligence you gather."
"I will."
"And if you find out who's responsible." Her words broke apart, and Nikolai understood that it had not just been land lost in this blight. For the queen, this was very personal. "I will be the one to punish him."
But who was the villain? The Darkling had created the Fold, but Nikolai and Zoya and Yori had all played a part in bringing him back. What had Zoya said?
"We're all monsters now."
Nikolai could only offer a half-truth.
"If that becomes clear, vengeance will be yours to take."
"I look forward to it." Makai stepped into the coach. "You may be surprised at how long I can hold a grudge."
"A pity you didn't meet General Nazielensky. I think you two would have found plenty to talk about."
The carriage door closed, and in a cloud of dust and hoofbeats, the shoe retinue was gone. Nikolai returned to the ballroom, where the musicians had struck up a lively tune. Queen Makai had stayed at the wedding only as a show of strength, so she wouldn't be seen running off after the treaty was signed. It felt strange to drink and dine and toast without Tamar there, knowing she was in danger, that if this all went wrong, she might never return to Ravka. Nadia had wished David and Jenya well, then retired early, too worried about the woman she loved to enjoy the party. Tolia said he had made his peace with being separated from his twin, but Nikolai could see the melancholy on his face. Despite his intimidating size, Tolia was the shyer of the twins, the killer who should have been a scholar if fate had ordered their lives differently.
"Where did David go?"
he asked as Jenya, smiling and rosy-cheeked from dancing, threw herself down in a chair and drank deeply from her wine glass. She seemed to glow in her golden gown, her eye patch embroidered with rubies. "We were in the middle of a dance when he muttered something about nose cones and vanished. It was very romantic."
"David danced?"
"I know. He whispered the count beneath his breath and stepped on my toes more than the floor." Her grin could have lit the entire ballroom. "I've never had more fun. And to think I had a queen at my wedding."
"And a king," Nikolai said with false indignation. She waved him off.
"Your old news. Her gown was just divine."
"I'm fairly sure she wanted to murder us all."
"That's just what weddings are like. When can we hope to hear from Tamar?"
We received word of their arrival and their meeting with Makai's ministers. Beyond that, who knew what lay ahead of them? A hope for alliance? A chance at peace? By midnight, the party had begun to wind down. Noblemen stumbling blearily to their carriages, Grisha meandering back to the little palace, singing and laughing. The candles were extinguished, and Nikolai retired to his quarters to look over the correspondence that had arrived with that afternoon's messenger. He would have liked nothing better than to go to bed and call the day a success, but his plans had only just begun to come together, and there was still so much to do. The sitting room felt empty and too silent. He was used to spending this time with Zoya, talking through the day's events. When there were two of them to face their battles, it didn't feel so overwhelming, and tonight that feeling was worse than usual. It wasn't just that they'd thrust themselves into the unknown with this false wedding and their play to win the shoe to their side. The demon had almost broken free today. Nikolai had nearly lost control, and he still wasn't sure what had caused it, or if it might happen again. He'd managed to leash the cursed thing, but he'd felt like he'd had one hand on the reins all night. He was almost afraid to fall asleep. Maybe it was safer not to. He rang for tea. He'd spend the night working. It was Tolia who brought the tray. He'd abandoned his red kefta and changed back into his olive drab uniform.
I can't sleep.
We could play cards, suggested Nikolai.
I've been working on a new poem.
Or we could shoot ourselves out of a cannon. Tolia's glower was ferocious.
A bit of culture wouldn't hurt you.
I have no objection to culture. I'll have you know I've fallen asleep at some of the very best ballets. Pour a cup for yourself.
As Tolia poured, Nikolai asked,
Tolia, Tamar found the girl of her dreams. How is it you're still alone?
Tolia shrugged his huge shoulders.
I have my faith, my books. I've never wanted more.
Were you in love with Alina?
Tolia finished pouring before he said,
Were you? I cared about her. I still do. I think I could have loved her in time.
Tolia took a sip of his tea.
I know she was only a girl to you, but to me, she is a saint. That's a different kind of love.
A loud bell began to ring from somewhere in the distance.
What is that?
Asked Tolia, his brow creasing. Nikolai was already on his feet.
The alarm bells in the lower town.
He hadn't heard them since his doomed birthday party, when most of the Lansoff line had been slaughtered.
Get!
He heard a distant drone, engines in the sky.
All the saints, it can't be.
Then a whoosh, like the loud, excited roar of a crowd.
Boom!
The first bomb struck. The room shook and Nikolai and Tolia were nearly thrown from their feet. Then another boom and another. Nikolai threw the door open. Half the hallway had caved in, leaving it blocked by a slump of rubble. The air was full of plaster dust. Nikolai could only pray that no guards or servants had been trapped already. He sprinted down the hall, Tolia beside him, and grabbed the first guard he could find, a young captain named Yorick. He was covered in dust and bleeding from where he'd been struck by something, but he had his rifle in hand and his eyes were clear.
Your Highness, he shouted, we have to get you to the tunnels. Gather everyone you can. Clear the palace and get them underground. But, boom. The roof may come down, said Nikolai. Move!
The very earth was shaking. It felt as if the world was coming apart.
Mobilize the Grisha to the town, Nikolai said as he and Tolia ran toward the little palace. They'll need healers and squallers to help move the debris. Signal Las Leon and get our flyers in the air.
Where are you going?
Said Tolia.
Nikolai was already racing toward the lake.
Up.
His boots pounded the dock. He leapt into the cockpit of the Peregrine. It wasn't quite as agile as the Sparrowhawk, but carried heavier guns. It was fast and lethal, and it felt like an animal coming to life around him. The flyer surged forward on the water, and then Nikolai was rising into the moonlight, searching the sky. The demon inside him shrieked in anticipation. Fjärden bombers were built of heavy steel. They carried major firepower, but were slow to maneuver. They shouldn't have been able to haul their payloads so far from home. They were too heavy, too fuel-hungry. A game of range. And Fierda had just made a move that would change that game forever. David's missiles could not remain a hypothetical any longer. Nikolai had never dreamed the Fjerdans would attack a civilian target or risk harming the Shu Queen. Had they known she would depart early, or simply gotten lucky? Or had Queen Makai known when the bombs would fall all along? He couldn't be sure, and he couldn't consider the implications now. Far below, he saw fires burning in the lower and upper towns. He didn't know how much damage the Grand Palace had sustained, but two of the little palace domes had crumpled and one wing was engulfed in flame. At least they hadn't managed to strike the dormitories. No one would be in the classrooms or workshops this late at night. He could see a smoldering crater at the lake shore, mere feet from where Grisha children trained and slept. They'd been aiming for the school. Nikolai peered into the night. Fierda painted its flyers dark gray for stealth. They were almost impossible to see, and hard to hear over the roar of the Peregrine. So he cut the engine. He let the flyer's wings catch the air, and he listened. There. To his left, 30 degrees. He waited for the clouds to part. And sure enough, he saw a shape moving, lighter than the night around it. He sent the engine rumbling to life and pushed the plane into a dive, firing. The Fjerdan bomber burst into flame. The rattle of gunfire filled his ears and he banked hard right, chased by another bomber. He needed better visibility. The clouds gave cover, but they were his enemy too. Bullets pinged off the side of the Peregrine. He couldn't tell how much damage he'd sustained. He remembered the feeling of plummeting toward the earth when David's rocket had hit. There would be no squallers on hand to save him now. He should land and take stock. No, he wasn't setting down, not when the people below, his people, were still vulnerable. The clouds were heavy. He couldn't see. But the demon inside him could. It was made of night. It wanted to fly. Nikolai hesitated. He'd never attempted something like this. He didn't know what might happen. What would it mean to give up control? Would he ever regain it? And while you debate, your people suffer. Go, he told the demon inside him. It's time to hunt. The sensation of releasing the monster was always a strange one. A breath snatched from his lungs, the feeling of rising up to pierce the surface of a lake. Then he was in two places at once. He was himself, a king taking a risk he shouldn't, a privateer making a gamble he must, a pilot with his hands gripping the Peregrine's controls. And he was the demon, racing through the air, a part of the dark, his wings spreading. His monster senses caught the roar of the engine, the smell of fuel. He spotted prey and dove. He seized the... His demon mind did not have words. It only knew the satisfaction of steel giving way beneath its talons, the screech of metal, the terror of the man it tore from the cockpit and slashed into with its claws. Blood poured over the demon's mouth. His mouth, hot and salty with iron. Then he was airborne again, leaping from the plummeting bomber, seeking another quarry. The demon was in control. It sensed the presence of the next bomber before Nikolai saw it. Was this the last? Hungry for destruction, the demon hurtled toward it through the night and slammed into the Fjerdan bomber, its talons tearing into steel. No, Nikolai willed it to pull back. I want them to know. I want them to live in fear. The demon climbed onto the front of the plane and slammed its clawed hand through the cockpit glass. The Fjerdan pilot screamed and Nikolai was looking directly into his eyes. Let them understand what they're fighting now. Let them know what's waiting next time they invade Ravka's skies. He saw the demon reflected in his enemy's eyes. I am the monster, and the monster is me. The demon opened its fanged mouth, but it was Nikolai's rage that rang out in its roar. For what had been done to his people, his home. The Fjerdan pilot babbled and wept, and the demon scented urine in the air. Go home and tell them what you've seen, Nikolai thought, as the demon soared through the night. Make them believe you. Tell them the Demon King rules Ravka now and vengeance is coming. Nikolai drew the demon back, and to his surprise, the thing didn't fight. The shadow disappeared inside him, but it felt different now. He could sense its satisfaction. Its thirst for blood and violence had been met. Its heart beat in time with his. It was frightening, and yet the satisfaction was his as well. He was meant to be the wise king, the good king. But right now, he didn't know how to be wise or good, only angry. The wound inside him burning like the city below, the demon's presence made it easier to bear. As the Peregrine descended, he tried to count the plumes of smoke rising from Osalta. Only daylight would reveal the true extent of the destruction and the lives lost. He set the plane down on the lake and let it coast to shore. Without the thunder of the engine in his ears, there were only the sounds of fear in the night, the ringing of alarm bells, the shouts of men as they attempted to put out fires and pull friends from the rubble. They would need his help. Nikolai stripped off his jacket and broke into a run. He would gather squalors, sun soldiers. They could aid with the search for survivors. He knew his flyers would already have departed from the Gilded Bog and Politsnaya to patrol the skies for more signs of the enemy. He would have to issue blackout warnings. They were in place at the shipyards and bases that could be considered military targets, but now every Ravkan town and village would have to snuff out their lanterns and find their way in the dark. As Nikolai approached the little palace, he saw the fabricator workshops and Corporal Kai laboratories had been completely obliterated. But whatever research they'd lost could be excavated or replicated. He spotted Tolia's massive frame in the crowd. He was about to call out to him when he registered the tears in Tolia's eyes, his hand pressed to his mouth. There were squalors trying to clear the rubble, and Jenya was with them. She was on her knees in her golden wedding gown. He muttered something about nose cones and then vanished. Dread crept into Nikolai's heart. Jenya. He went to his knees beside her. She clutched his sleeve. For a moment, she didn't seem to recognize him. Her red hair was thick with dust, her face streaked with tears. I can't find him, she said, her voice lost, bewildered. I can't find David.